It was interesting. I operated a few years before, and my colleague and cardiothoracic surgeon, very experienced. He's always working with blood.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast with me, Dr. Cameron McIntosh. We're coming for season three live. One-on-one interviews for the podcast. It's really nice to be able to actually see people in person and speak. And we are in Brussels in Belgium at the European Rhinoplasty course. And I've got the absolute honor and privilege of having one of the other faculty members all the way from Greece, Yannis Konstantinidis, to be able to speak to us. Yannis, welcome to the podcast.
Nice to meet you, Cameron. It's an honor. And as I told you in the coffee break, you do a great job, organizing this World Rhinoplasty Day, the Rhinoplasty Olympics, let's say, and for bringing us together. And I would like to send a message to all our friends, all the family, rhinoplasty family, that we should meet such a meeting here, the European Rhinoplasty Course, and other meetings to exchange knowledge, to share knowledge, experience, and etc.
So
It's
Yannis,
nice to be with you.
no, it's great. Tell us for the listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up where you are.
I started my specialty in Germany. I worked 6 years with Wolfgang Graf in Fulda, and then I moved to home.
From the frontal sinus surgery.
Exactly.
That's
We
amazing.
wrote the first paper together about the classification of the frontal and the nasal approaches. And I was really, this was a great experience for me, and it was a great pleasure to meet such a teacher and, let's say, second father. And then I moved to Homburg University, and then from Homburg to Erlangen University, worked there with Professor Iro, Professor Wiegand. There was a very difficult decision, 2003, what to do, to stay in Germany or to move back to the roots, go back to Greece. And my wife is a German, I have a German wife, and then we decided to go back to Greece. And I became then the professor and head of the university department in Thessaloniki. And since then, we organize meetings, courses, and I sent my residents in meetings also. And the last years, we organized yearly the Thessaloniki Rhino Days. We have also organized the ERS meeting in Thessaloniki under difficult conditions, as you know, under COVID.
So for the listeners, tell us what's the ERS stand for?
The European Rhinologic Society meeting. And this was a great success, and I was very happy we in the board and the ERS board. We had a lot of stress.
Of course, post-COVID.
Yes, exactly. And we had 1,100 participants in person and nearly 500 online. And I think this was great. And since then, I think a few rhinologists know where Thessaloniki is.
It's amazing.
And this is also something that I would like to send a message. So you're welcome to visit us,
Fantastic.
you Cameron, and also the other people from this great rhinoplasty family.
Okay, so now let's carry on along this route that we're going on, rhinology and rhinoplasty. So I think it's possibly two things. It's a subject not often spoken about at rhinoplasty courses, but it's something that's much more common than we think, is people with some type of nasal pathology, not just purely rhinoplasty. So be that some kind of allergy or some kind of infection, etc. Tell me a little bit about how you approach that with rhinoplasty.
That's an excellent question, Cameron, because we should not lose the forest and seeing the tree. We have to evaluate the patient as a whole person and as a whole pathology. And very often we see patients that had an excellent septoplasty, excellent aesthetic result after septorhinoplasty, but they still have a blocked nose to do the allergic rhinitis, vasomotoric rhinitis, chronic rhinosinusitis. So what we are doing is we completely evaluate our patients also about other pathologies. And it is very important, and I think we should do that to treat them, to go for all therapeutic possibilities before we operate, before we take the knife and perform a septal rhinoplasty. And I think this is very, very important because in the end, if the patient cannot breathe, I think this is a problem. And he asked you, you did excellent work, but I cannot breathe.
Yeah.
I still have problems.
Yeah.
So this is very important. And we are also take care about the condition of the mucosa before we operate. I think this is also another issue. So to use saline solutions, to use pharmaca and sprays and etc. To have your nasal mucosa in the best condition before and during surgery.
Okay. So another question. So a patient that presents and they have nasal polyps as well. So there's maybe some septal pathology, nasal polyps, they want their rhinoplasty. There's no signs of any infection though. What do you do in such a case? Do you do punctal endoscopic sinus surgery at the same time, or do you do two different operations?
We know from the literature that there is a, if a patient has no a purulent rhinosinusitis, pus inside, pus inside the nose, and also no aspergilloman, etc., in these cases there is a very low risk to have an infection if you do both.
That
means if you do an FES operation, functional endoscopic sinus surgery, and a rhinoplasty. So we do both.
Okay.
Only in cases where you see pus inside the nose, or we see in the CT an aspergillosis, and we have an isolated pathology, a purulent pathology, you know, in the frontal sinus, for example, that is not easily accessible, or that after surgery you may have problems after functional endoscopic surgery, then in these cases we do first the FES, and then we go in a second step and do the rhinoplasty. But in the majority of the cases, you do both in one.
Okay.
Because it's also easier for our patients, you know, in Greece, to say the patient, you have a problem with polyps, and to do two operations, to pay twice. Yeah. This is a little bit difficult.
No. Yeah. Okay. And I think what I'm chatting about is packing the nose after surgery. So if it's like just a pure septal rhinoplasty, compared to a septal rhinoplasty with sinus work at the same time, is there differences for you in that? And if so, what do you do?
We are still packing the nose. We're still packing the
with
nose.
What?
We use Merosel.
Okay.
And we use gel foam.
Yes.
You know, and we put it on the traumatic surfaces.
Yes.
And this will resorb.
Yes.
The first phase, and then we use the suction to remove it. And we use also silicone forms to stabilize the septum. And the last years I didn't show a hematoma, synechia, and etc. And we start directly after removal of the packing with washing the nose. And we see the first week, every 2-3 days our patients, the first week. Then after 1 week, and then after 10 days, and then every month, you know, wound healing is completely after 3 months. In the first 3-4 weeks, you have the crusting.
Yes.
Then you have a lymphedema. Then you have a granulations, and then you have the closure of the wound.
Yes.
And this is a process of nearly 3 months. There is a study from Hosemann.
Yeah.
He was also in Erlangen University. And the most important for us are the first 3-4 weeks.
Yes.
And especially before summer, we send the people after 2-3 weeks to the seaside to wash with clean water from the sea. And I can tell you, this is something really helpful.
And post-op antibiotics?
Post-op, no. If there is no pus, if there is no purulent rhinosinusitis, we do not use antibiotics postoperatively.
Well,
only a single shot intraoperatively.
Yes. Okay. Couple more things I want to know. the wave of preservation rhinoplasty has potentially made for the new person wanting to do rhinoplasty seem overwhelming because there's so many techniques out there. What would you say to residents listening on the podcast who kind of at the start of their career, some of your fatherly advice?
I think they should not start with preservation technique. They should start with a normal techniques as we started. And then to understand first the anatomy, you know, to perform a conservative humbectomy, to separate the upper lateral cartilages from the septum, go incrementally, remove a little bit the cartilaginous part of the hump, the septal of the septum, and then go and incrementally remove the cartilage and then remove also the bony hump. And then learn also the other techniques, the spreader grafts, the auto spreader flaps, and all these techniques. And then you have the knowledge, to do also preservation technique, because it sounds very easy. It is not easy.
Yeah.
You have to be careful, you know, how much you resect. Sorry. How much you will resect, where you will resect, and then how you perform the lateral osteotomies.
Yeah.
How you perform the osteotomies, and also if you do push down, in which cases,
yeah,
and which are the ideal candidates.
Yeah.
I think this is the asking point. You cannot do a preservation technique in all the cases.
Yes,
it's impossible.
Absolutely.
If you have a difficult radix, you know, you cannot do a preservation.
Yeah.
So I think this is an excellent technique for special cases. But if I have to give an advice, I think this is not a technique to start.
Yes.
Start with the septum, learn the septum. As the septum goes, so goes the nose, you know.
Yeah.
It's so important for support of the tip, for the axis, you know, to learn, to manage difficulties in septoplasty. And then after the septum, the evolution must come step by step.
Yes.
You cannot go. And in the, if you do rhinoplasties, Cameron, I think you have to select also the cases in the beginning, easy cases. If you have the feeling that you are not confident, then have another more experienced surgeon with you in the first operations, and then go and go. And there are three basic, let's say, factors. One is to the theoretical knowledge. You have to learn, you have to visit meetings. The other is to go to the lab, to dissect, to get in dissection courses. And the third is to have also a teacher, to have a good relationship with other teachers, to discuss your problems, to have the opportunity to can call him and ask him, you have such a case, what is this opinion? And it's, I think a rhinoplasty, to teach it, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
And everything you do, it's visible, you know, it's not easy, I think.
No, absolutely.
And it is a long educational process and progress. Sure.
I love this Greek philosopher, the stuff you say. It's wonderful. I'm glad you didn't stay in Germany. Eh? I'm glad you came back to Greece. I want to hear that funny story again you told me about the cardiothoracic surgeon. Tell our listeners about
this. It was interesting. I operated a few years before and my colleague and cardiothoracic surgeon, very experienced. He's always working with blood barriers. He so opened the thorax and it's up inside and etc. And his wife needed a rhinoplasty. So I did the rhinoplasty and he asked me to be present in the OR. I said, it's, you know, the basic principles are against that.
Yes.
Because there are principles that say, don't be in the OR, don't operate people that you like, and don't be in the OR people that you have a strong emotional relationship.
Yes.
And he said, no, I will be there because she need me. And then I said, you have to ask the director of the private hospital. And he gives him, he said also, okay, you can go. And then he came inside, I stopped it with my rhinoplasty, and then he collapsed. And I found it very, very funny. It was because such an experienced surgeon, you know, And this is, I think, this demonstrates how important it is to follow the principles, you know, not to be inside and not to operate in people that you love and to not operate your family.
Yeah. Now, Jonas, you know, it's so interesting listening to you. And I think one of the big take home messages for today is how important the nasal physiology is. And, you know, you can't just go out there and think you're going to smack out a rhinoplasty if you're not actually managing the patient holistically, you know? And,
it's absolutely right. I made the experience, Cameron, that, if you have a patient that the functional result is excellent and there is the aesthetic result is not perfect, you have not a problem. You have to go with him and go for a second small procedure. But if you have a patient, if the aesthetic result is not and he cannot breathe, then you have a big problem, a huge problem. Because this is something that it's not only the mirror, you know, it's not only the aesthetic result. He cannot breathe.
No, absolutely.
I had such a case. I revised it a few months before. She worked as a personal trainer. She couldn't work more.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. Yes, of course.
Sure.
So I think we have to think about the function, especially as ENT doctors, and try our best to improve also the aesthetic appearance of the nose. But I think the main is the function. The main is, as you said, the septum, the other pathologies of the nose. Because if we don't think about that, this is unacceptable as an ENT doctor.
Absolutely. Well, guys, there you've heard it from the horse's mouth. Eh?
Yes, absolutely.
Jonas, thank you. Thank you so much for this
chat. It's a pleasure. And stay the way you are. Continue with the Rhinoplasty Olympics. And I think you do an excellent job because rhinoplasty and our field needs also people that bring us together to exchange knowledge and to share experience, you know. And thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak to all our
people. So guys, come back again next week for another episode. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.